Hello and welcome to the latest Science of Sport podcast. I'm your host Matt Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Harry Routledge. So Harry is a high performance practitioner, having worked in the USA, the UK and Australia, and he's held roles such as Head of Performance and Head of Sport Science, which makes him the perfect person today to discuss how you can design your career as a sports scientist. So without further ado, it's time to welcome Harry onto the show. So Harry, welcome to the Science of Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invitation. Looking forward to offering some stuff to a really good podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, mate. So can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are and what you've been up to until now?
Yeah, so obviously Harry Routledge, if you're going to sort of phrase it, it'd probably be an experienced high performance practitioner. Been lucky enough to work all over the world, spent some time in the US, some time in Australia, the UK, mainly in team sports, and held positions as Head of Performance, Head of Sports Science, and fortunate enough to have a PhD in exercise physiology from Liverpool John Moores University as well.
Absolutely excellent, mate. So we're obviously here to discuss how to almost design the perfect sports scientist. So before we get into the real meat and potatoes of that, can you explain what a sports scientist does?
Yeah, I think the phrase sports science is quite broad, right? And I think in a nutshell for me, what a sports scientist's role is to do is to try to analyze, interpret all aspects of physical performance across all its disciplines and really utilize those to maximize physical capabilities of an athlete. And if you can do that, I think you're on your way to sort of ticking that box of being a good sports scientist.
Excellent. So with that in mind then, what are those different roles? You said it encompasses a lot, which, yeah, very true. So can you give us a quick rundown of the different kind of specialities that are all possible, and like what kind of roles do they mean as well? Because obviously you can be a nutritionist, but does that mean you only do one thing? So talk us through all of those different things.
Yeah, I think sports science encompasses all these things, right? So you've got within sports science, and sports science being a very global term as we speak, you've got nutrition, you've got strength conditioning, you've got exercise physiology sits into that sports science space. You've got prehabilitation, rehabilitation. All these things really encompass this sports science threshold. And I think where the industry is now, where what makes a really good sports scientist is someone who really has got an understanding of all those individual elements that can really bring it all together and have influence on, whether it's an individual athlete or a group of athletes, really have an influence of all those individual aspects together to really drive that physical performance piece.
And when you go into a team, for example, then what kind of different roles are you looking at within, you mentioned football, for example, team sports, what kind of roles are you looking at there? And maybe let's take the highest possible level, because they're probably going to have lots and lots of staff members. What kind of people are knocking around there?
Yeah, within these big clubs, youth Premier League's example, they'll have a pure nutritionist who solely looks across the nutrition. You might have a rehab coach whose pure focus is to take the rehab players. You have a gym base, but there's someone who's gym based. You also may even get down to the point where you've got a recovery specialist now, really sort of taking into consideration all aspects of physiology and really driving that recovery process. And you might have a data scientist now. I think data is a big part of where sports science is now. And I think to sort of jump back a question, I think a key part is, from a sports science standpoint, is understanding data as well. I think that's the key. You don't have to be a mathematician, you don't have to be a statistician, but you've got to have an understanding of data to be able to sort of objectify what you're doing when you're communicating with coaches or the staff members. I think data is a big part of that as well. So sports science is now starting to delve into the data world as a lot of things do, and having an understanding that's also really key as well.
Obviously, you've gone through a few different options there as to like the different job roles, but what are the key attributes that a sports scientist then needs? Because you've got different content as in the terms of like your actual knowledge. So maybe you're a rehab specialist and you've done some physiology stuff, some physiotherapy stuff, some S&C stuff. Maybe you're not quite as busy with the data. You've got a data scientist who's really in with the computers, programming, all that kind of stuff. Probably doesn't have the physio background. So what kind of attributes are then necessary as a person to be a great sports scientist?
Yeah, I think key one's communication for me. So like you alluded to there, you've got so many different facets of sports science globally, and sort of driving this overarching holistic approach to to perform him. So having that communication and relationships piece, and being able to build relationships with people so that you can all sort of drive in that one direction. We've all probably been a part of groups of people where you sort of, not everyone's on the same page and you sort of, things get missed, and that can be really difficult within the sports science realm. So I think key attribute is being able to listen as well. Ultimately, people are going to have better expertise in different areas than what you may have. So being able to understand and listen to those people. And also, I think the key is actually if there's areas that you don't understand, well, try and upskill yourself in those areas so that then you can have those conversations and you can all speak with that common language, and that ultimately drive that like group focus and all sort of running in the same direction, which is absolutely key when if you think about sports science from a much more global perspective.
And what are then the consequences if communication isn't on par, let's say, like up to the level that it should be?
Yeah, I think especially in my experience within team sports, like some things will happen where a message from the group, from the department, can be put across in a different way, which ultimately opens you up to sort of questioning. And that's a really key part. You've got to really make sure that everyone's aligned and on that same sort of, has got that same collective message, because you don't want a coach going, oh, what about this player today? And then someone says something different to what the group decision was. And that can really open you up to different sort of tricky situations. And I think that's where communication and that collective message is absolutely key. And even with athletes as well, you want to make sure that if you're disseminating a message to an athlete, whether it be around the best nutritional strategy, if as long as you've got that communication with the nutritionist, for example, and that player might ask you in a one-off conversation or a passing comment, you can make sure that the information you give is correct, and then that ensures that player or athlete is maximizing that part of their physical performance.
And obviously communication then is number one at this stage, but are there any other key attributes that sports scientists should be looking at?
I think for me, and it's quite a difficult one to say you have to be like this, but I think part of it is to be able to like have an understanding of what you're trying to get your athletes to go through. I'm not saying that if you're a strength coach, you've got to be able to back squat 100 kilos or be able to do a clean or jerk or snatch, but have an understanding of exactly what it is that your athlete is going through. So really sort of like embed yourself in whatever that facet it may be. Like if you're trying to prescribe great nutrition for somebody and ultimately your breakfast that day was something from a fast food takeaway or something, then it's really hard to say, oh, the athlete should be doing this, for example. I think the key one is actually really embedding yourself in that and actually enjoying what you're doing. But I think if you really understand and really get fulfillment out of that sports science area and you're full understanding of that yourself, then that passion comes out with an individual. I think that's a really good one for me. I think the amount of people that you meet within your industry are either a failed athlete and go down the sports science route, it's because they have a passion for what they do. So it can be really helpful to actually have a full understanding of exactly what it is that you're asking that individual to do and sort of put yourself in their shoes a little bit.
Cool. So obviously that's kind of covered some of the options in terms of what the jobs are available, but also what kind of skills you need. When it comes to qualifications, then, what kind of qualifications does a sports scientist need? Because it's not a protected term, right?
No, absolutely not. An undergraduate degree is going to be your first point of call, and that's going to be the first place to start. An honours degree in sport and exercise science from any sort of high end university is going to be really key. And I think as you move through that, then that's going to be quite broad, and it's going to be quite a broad sort of degree basis there, and then potentially moving on to a master's program and be getting sort of a bit more in depth in the area that you're interested in, whether that is strength conditioning, whether it's exercise physiology, nutrition. But then I think where the most learning is going to be is sort of these industry accreditations. So whether it's a UKSCA or an NSCA, or if you want to become CENAR accredited from a nutritional standpoint, a BASIS accredited for sport and exercise science, I think they're really key, because that sort of sets you apart from the others that are maybe coming through that, whether it's a degree program or whether it's a master's program. I think having those accreditations are key, and it's really, that can also help with that from a CPD standpoint as well, because you have to make sure that you're adhering to some key guidelines, and especially from an upskilling standpoint as well. But not only that, you're going to get access to other great practitioners that can help develop your practice as well. So those industry accreditations are pretty key for me.
And I am rudely interrupting to make sure you're up to date on the Science of Sport Coach Academy. The Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you've enjoyed today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, you can get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days using the link in the show notes, which is available to you when you finish listening. So hit that link in just a few minutes' time. And then in terms of experience, obviously there's a lot of job adverts out there that say they want some kind of experience. That can be tricky as well, right? So I know there are people in positions where they go, well, I really want to do that job, but I don't have 2 years experience. So how do I get 2 years experience so that I can do the job at the lowest end anyway? I mean, it's a never ending circle, right? If you don't have experience, you can't get the job. So how do you get experience without the job? Yeah. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do people then start to build that out?
Yeah, it is hard, but I think you can always seek an opportunity. So whether it's having been through the process of hiring people and hiring junior members of staff, I think something that I always look for was, have you gone out of your comfort zone a little bit and just gone to a local football club and tried to say, look, I'm here to help. Can I offer any opportunities, whether it's one or two players, to get some experience? Because no matter the level in those initial phases, everyone's a human. So everyone's, like, from an exercise physiology standpoint, biomechanical standpoint, however you want to phrase that, you're working with the human body. So having experience of a semi-professional versus professional, the traits are going to be quite similar. Yes, the level of athleticism will be different, granted, but the actual coaching points are going to be very, very similar there. So I think just get out there and just offer yourself to as many people in your local area as you can, whether it's a university team, for example, whether your university offers a strength and conditioning internship that you can do a couple of nights a week that gives you that coaching experience, and that hands-on experience is really key. I know a lot of university degrees at the minute offer a sandwich course and a sandwich placement year, which can be really advantageous. And football clubs, especially in the UK, are really sort of looking out for that. And this time here is a great time of year for those opportunities to start come up. And you can built into your degree program, you can get a year's experience, and that a year's experience in a football club will be invaluable as you sort of transition into that job search and career search. But equally, I think it doesn't always have to be in the sport that you necessarily ultimately want to end up in. I think if you decide to go to your local swimming club, for example, and offer yourself to help some local swimming athletes, just because they're not football players, you're also showing that you can diversify yourself a little bit and get some experience in some completely different sports, which can be as ultimately valuable if team sports is ultimately where you want to be.
Excellent. So when you got all of that all sorted, right? So you've gone, right, I know what I want to do, and I'm kind of like, I've got a qualification, whatever it is, whether it's a specific one or a general one. Got the attributes, got the qualifications. You're starting in your career. At some point, you're going to have to make some choices, right? Either you're going to specialize down one route, or you're going to stay general, and you're going to have to do a bit of everything. And especially in football, obviously, there's a lot of practitioners who do a little bit of everything and don't necessarily specialize in one thing, especially when you're not got all the money that all the top Premier Leagues have got. So what are the advantages and disadvantages to being either a specialist or a generalist?
Yeah, I think you can actually be, and this is probably a term I'm going to completely make up here, a specialized generalist, if that makes sense. So you may have a specialism in nutrition and understand the exercise molecular pathways that ultimately drive adaptation from exercise. So that's brilliant, because that is your specialism. But within that, you've got to have an understanding of, okay, if my specialism is nutrition, for example, I've got to understand how nutrition will ultimately impact the rehab process. But if I don't understand the rehab process, then I'm not going to be able to prescribe the correct nutrition for that. So then you've probably got to spend a bit of time understanding the gym sessions, and then ultimately that will drive you might not be a complete specialist in the gym, but you can ultimately get to the point where you can be like, oh, so-and-so needs to be taken for a gym session today. Are you able to do that? You may be the nutritionist. That may be your sole role. But ultimately you go, yeah, I've had enough experience. I can understand what's required, and I can step into that role and help from a gym standpoint. Now, equally, if we continue on that rehab process, that player will eventually go out on the grass and begin their grass-based rehab, if we're talking team sports, get outside and understand that and help out with that. So then you're beginning to really generalize yourself across the process of rehabilitation. But ultimately, you're Your focus is still nutrition, but you become a bit more generalized in your approach across rehab, across grass-based rehab, and then that will ultimately give you a better understanding of how to progress rehab, whether it's objective from a number standpoint, from a rehab regression, from a GPS low standpoint, for as an example. But that really broadens your horizon then, and then you can have a better understanding of how nutrition, if that is your specialism, can impact on not only game day performance or training performance within the week from a global standpoint, but ultimately how you can really influence that nutritional strategy for a rehab player as they progress through their rehab process. Now, equally, if you turn that on its head again and your specialism is strength conditioning and you're a gym-based practitioner and that's where you really thrive and enjoy that, okay, you've then also got a good understanding of maybe not to the level as you have in the gym, but a good understanding of what happens on the grass from a team sport perspective. Because on those days when the grass session may be high load, high volume, high intensity, if you don't understand what that looks like, then you're solely going to maintain your gym-based program, but you don't understand what's actually happened before, then you may then begin to overload the players because you don't fully understand the actual grass part of it. So, and then equally, to go back again, if your specialism is strength conditioning, but you've got a generalized understanding of nutrition, you can then potentially help prescribe nutrition that's going to really aid your practice from a strength conditioning standpoint. And that really broadens your horizons from a bit of more of a holistic approach to the process of sports science globally. So I think, like, yes, it's fine to have a specialism and a real sort of a fully deep understanding to a high level of knowledge in a certain area. But in order to be a really good practitioner in team sports and for me in sports science generally, you've got to have a good understanding of the whole process in order to be able to prescribe your specialism to the maximum. And I think that's a really key point for there. So like I say, it's really sort of embedding yourself in the whole program.
Absolutely excellent. So obviously when you're an athlete, at some point you might just get given someone who is a sports scientist or a strength conditioner, all of those great specializations. But sometimes you might get to choose, right? So let's say you're looking to the private sector and you say, you know what, my club is semi-pro, they don't provide it, or my elite team doesn't give me the care and attention that I think I need or deserve. How should an athlete then select a sports scientist or one of the many like categories of when they want to work with someone individually to improve their performance?
I think the key there is probably something we referred to before, is having those industry accreditations and that industry recognition that they are of a level. And there's probably two parts to that from an athlete standpoint. One of it is to make sure that they actually are accredited in what they say they're accredited in, to make sure that the practice they're going to give is to the level required. And also to protect the athlete as well. You want to make sure that you're working with someone who's industry recognized. That's a key. Their experience, try and understand where they've come from, but also just really have a conversation with that individual that you may be seeking, to make sure that you've got a relationship there. Because there's going to be times when if you're an athlete seeking out a sports scientist, then there's going to be elements where they're going to have to push you in certain ways, and you've got to make sure that you've got a relationship with that person and you've got a mutual understanding and you can get on with that individual so that they can sort of drive your physical performance. But I think the key starting point for me is making sure that they are accredited in what they say they are, to make sure that you're going to get the best provision possible.
Excellent. So before we wrap up, I want to know what your recommendations are in terms of developing all of those great skills that we talked about. So there's loads of different things that we've touched on, but how can then a sports scientist, let's say you're just finishing your degree, you want to make a step and make the most impact possible on the people you work with, how can you go about developing those key skills and competencies to make sure that they can have the most impact in their career?
I think this comes back to some sort of like youth athletic development stuff, and it's the whole 10,000 hours piece. And I think that can also be key for practitioners. It doesn't need to be 10,000 hours per se to become a master. But equally, I think that the more time you can spend in whatever that may be and really working on your skill set is going to really push you to the next level and really sort of drive your career. I think also, I think with the world of social media we live in now, everyone's a lot more open and everyone's accessible. So if there's someone that you've seen maybe online, on LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever it may be, and you're like, oh, I really like some of the stuff that they do, or they've had some good experiences, well, a lot of people are very open now to have those conversations and sort of guide people on the right paths and be a mentor, if you will, to sort of like help you along the way. And this, you may get some key, some real key skills from those individuals that can really help your practice. So, and have that impact. I think impact on a team, especially if you are going to go into team sports, as we discussed, is the relationships. If you ultimately get into a team, whether it's semi-professional, whatever it may look like, I think the key part is having those relationships first and foremost. If you can build those relationships quickly and those people skills, I think that's really key, because then that will allow you to have an impact alongside the knowledge. But having the people skills will make you allow you to have an impact, because when you build relationships with people, then they'll listen. And ultimately, a lot of what a sports scientist's job to do is to either take an individual through a specific physical performance plan in whatever capacity that looks like. So having an understanding and having a relationship with the people first will allow that to take place, I think.
Excellent. So, Harry, massive thanks for your time and effort today. It's been a pleasure talking. Where can people find a little bit more about you and what you're up to?
So if you want to reach out, my Twitter link will be put on this podcast and also LinkedIn. And yeah, that's where you'll find me if anyone wants to have a conversation.
Perfect. Thank you very much, mate. It's been a pleasure, and look forward to speaking again soon.
Thanks for your time.
Cheers, buddy.
And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to Harry for all of his hard work on today's podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you do at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science of Sport Coach Academy. Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you've enjoyed today's podcast and you've got your hands on some more great sports science information, all you have to do is hit the link in the show notes so you can get in there completely for free for the next 7 days. What's more, every time you complete one of the courses, you get a certificate of completion which will prove your ongoing education. So hit that link in just a few seconds' time. And of course, if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it would be fantastic if you could recommend it to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing you the best possible guests and the best possible content. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks from me. I'm Matt Solomon for Science of Sport, and I'll speak to you next week.